things are not always as they seem. Of all of the things that Jesus said, one of the most useful and most true is when he told us that we should judge not by appearances, but use right judgment. That's good advice on just so many levels. Because in this life, what's true isn't always apparent at all. And what seems apparent isn't always true. Even the things we learned in school, things we all believe, they are not obvious. They are not apparently true, not all of them. The classic example is the fact that in school we were all taught that the sun is many, many times the size of the earth, and that it is the center of our solar system. The earth and all the other planets revolve around it. But that's not how things look, is it? No, the way things appear to be, this earth is many, many times the size of the sun. The earth is tiny in relation to the earth, the size of maybe a lemon. At least those, the expensive one in the store, not the little cheap ones. And the earth doesn't seem to move, except for occasionally in California. Most of the time, the earth seems pretty stable to us, and the sun moves. If you go to the East Coast, I've been on the East Coast, I've watched the sun, and it sure seemed like it rose up out of the ocean. And Faye and I lived on the beach on the west coast of Florida, and every night we'd look out our window and we'd watch the sun as it sunk down into the Gulf of Mexico. You could almost imagine hearing it go out, like when you stick a match in the water, psst, you know? That's how it appeared. And it appeared that way to people for a long, long time. It appeared that way to second century astronomer and mathematician Ptolemy, whose geocentric, in other words, earth-centered vision of the universe prevailed in science for over a millennia. For 13 or 1400 years, all of the universities of the Western world taught the Ptolemaic model of the universe, that the Earth was the center of everything, and all the planets and the sun, they rotated around the Earth, which was like the stable hub, the axle of the universe, around which everything else rotated. Because that's the way it looked to the observer. And it even seemed to make sense in other ways, too. It seemed to be verified by a literal interpretation of certain passages from the Bible, especially the Psalms. And what's more, it even, and this is something we don't always remember, it even seemed to be verified by the best mathematics of the day. Because Ptolemy was a mathematician. And based on his model of the universe, the way he mathematically worked it out, you actually could, with some reliability, predict the future positions of the planets. You could tell where they were going to be. So it made sense. It worked on paper. It was obvious to the naked eye that he was right. Only he was wrong. But as far as everyone in school that went to school, which weren't that many people, all the way up until, oh, the 15th or 16th century, everybody just accepted what he taught. It seemed obvious to everyone. But then these two troublemakers came along. First, a Polish guy, a Polish mathematician, named Copernicus. And he started adding things up with kind of a new math. Sort of like some of our children had in school that we couldn't help them with their homework. Well, his was a new math compared to Ptolemy's. And through his calculations and his observations and the observations of a fellow named Tycho, he began to recognize that Ptolemy was off the mark, that actually the sun was the center around everything else revolved. And then came the man that our contemporary, Stephen Hawking, said was more than any other person, any other single person, responsible for the birth of modern science. Then Galileo came along, which, by the way, is his first name. Galileo is sort of like Elvis. Everybody just knows him by his first name. Well, Galileo was indeed the Elvis of science for centuries. He took Copernicus's idea, and he validated, he verified it, because he not only had new math, he had something else, something that almost no one else at the time had, or had even thought of or seen. Galileo had made himself a telescope. And he must have been quite a bright guy, because he'd only read about such a thing, but having read about someone else making one somewhere, he figured it out, he put it together, he refined it, and he had the best telescope the world up to that point had ever seen. And through it, he saw worlds beyond, in a way, no one else had ever seen them. Can you imagine what that was like? To look through the first telescope. And you knew it wasn't magic, because you could look at things on Earth that you knew what they looked like. You knew what they looked like up close. You could verify that this instrument really allowed you to see things far away. So when you looked at the moon or you looked at the planets, you were seeing things as they truly are for the very first time. Can you imagine what that must have been like? It opened Galileo's eyes and the eyes of people that followed him in a way, well, that we've never been able to close them. It changed our whole understanding of the world. It gave us basically the same system that we learned in school, based on the Copernican system, but refined and developed by people like Galileo. But if you think about it, no human being had actually seen it with his own eyes except through a telescope until 50 years ago, until the first astronauts. It's really been only since the 1960s that human beings have been far enough away from the planet to see the sun, to see the Earth from the moon, perhaps, to see how things really do line up in perspective. But Galileo saw it through his telescope, and Copernicus through his head. But just because they came up with a new and better theory, a clear understanding of truth, that doesn't mean that Ptolemy and the people that followed him were fools, that it was ridiculous for them to believe what they believed. Remember, it seemed to be validated by math. It was validated by observation. They had just left a couple things out of the equation. They hadn't calculated for the fact that things far away seem smaller than they actually are. And conversely, things close up that are right in your face, especially if magnified, as we can do with a magnifying glass or with that evolution of Galileo's telescope, the zoom lens on your camera, things close up can seem far bigger than they actually are. And the reason why the Earth seems stable and the planets seem to rotate around it is the Earth is the platform on which we're standing. It's like the illusion you have when you take off on an airplane or land. Have you ever noticed, especially if you're sitting in the window seat, when the wheels first lift off the ground, you don't get the sensation that the plane is going up, you get the sensation that the Earth is dropping away, that all the buildings are shrinking. Same thing when you land. When you break through the crowds, you're just about to land. It doesn't seem like the plane is going down. It seems like the ground is rushing up to meet you. And no matter how many times you fly in a plane, you always, for a moment at least, if you look out the window, you get that sensation. Or like the sensation you get in a parking lot when you stop, you're taking off your seatbelts, and all of a sudden you jam on the brakes because you think your car's moving, and the car next to you is backing up. But it's an optical illusion, but it completely alters your experience, doesn't it? You really feel like it's happening in that instant. It's all because relative to the platform we are in, the car or the plane, we seem to be standing still. But airplanes don't remain stable, and the Earth doesn't drop and rise, does it? No, that is an illusion. And since things that are true, as we teach in Unity, and as the ancients understood too, are true on many levels, this doesn't just apply to fields of mathematics or astronomy. It has a lot of life applications as well. A lot of us have big problems, face big challenges, obstacles that seem almost too big for us to hurdle, suffer hurts that seem almost too big for us to forgive or even bear. Are they really that big? What if they only seem big because we're so close? The Earth seems bigger than the Sun because we're very close to the Earth. The Sun is millions of miles away. What if that obstacle that seems so insurmountable is just easy to step over? We're just too close. What if that problem that is so unforgivable isn't that hard to forgive? We're just too close to it. What if that problem that seems so great is smaller than we think? We've just gotten too close to it. You know, our minds are a lot like Galileo's telescope. Anything we focus our minds on seems bigger than it actually is. And the longer we focus on it, the larger the thing will seem to grow. But is this thing that has grown so large, is it as in our face as we think, or is that an illusion, sort of like if you ever looked through a pair of binoculars and you almost felt like you could reach out and touch the thing? Or maybe at one of those 3D movies. I haven't gone to the recent ones. But when Fay and I lived in Florida, when you live in Florida, you have friends and relatives you never even knew you had. And they all wanted to go to Disney. And we had season passes, so that was fine. And at Epcot Center, they had this 3D movie at the Kodak Pavilion. And it was an excellent 3D movie. But if you watch, you know, we'd seen it so many times, what I would do is I would watch the audience, because there were parts in the movie when everybody in the audience would involuntarily reach up, because it seemed to them something was just right there, right in front of them, they could just reach out and touch it. And you would look, this huge auditorium, bigger than this one, you'd see every single person looking straight ahead going like that. But what they were seeing wasn't right there in front of them. No, it was maybe 50 feet away from them up on that screen. But it sure seemed close. Well, maybe it's all a matter of focus. Maybe I've just let this problem get too much in my face. Maybe what I really need to do is step back mentally and spiritually even. I'm reminded of a poem that Unity's co-founder's son, Lowell, wrote. Lowell Fillmore wrote in his poem called The Answer, "When for a purpose I had prayed and prayed and prayed until my words seemed worn and bare with arduous use, and I had knocked and asked and knocked and asked again, and all my fervor and persistence brought no hope, I paused to give my weary brain a rest and ceased my anxious human cry. In that still moment, after self had tried and failed, There came a glorious vision of God's power, and lo, my prayer was answered in that hour. What is meditation? Meditation is the practice of pulling back, of withdrawing yourself from your situation. Are you doing this to run away? No. We do this to get a little perspective. If I'm making a big deal out of something, maybe what I really most need to do is just back off in every way. Maybe the problem or the position I have taken isn't as central as I think it is, isn't something that I have to stand forth on and be immovable about. Maybe that's just a cognitive distortion, the mental equivalent of one of those optical illusions. Maybe I'm just being stubborn. Maybe that is the thing I most need to back away with. If we want guidance in how to see things, how to tell if we need to pull back, Jesus offers that. Jesus Christ in his Sermon on the Mount gave us a kind of an eye test, like you might get at the eye doctors. And his test is simple. He doesn't require you to read letters of various sizes or the kind we used to have when we were kids where you had to point which way the E's were pointing. His was simpler. Jesus said the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is sound, your entire body will be full of light. But if your eye is unsound, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the very light in you is darkness, how dense is that darkness? Well, think about what he's telling us. If you want to tell if your vision is sound or unsound, if you spiritually need corrective lenses or not, it's all a matter of darkness and light. Are you looking at life in a lighthearted way? Are you seeing the light, seeking the light, giving things a light touch? That's a sound way of seeing things. Are you always in the dark? Are you one of those people that has a storm cloud over your head all the time, like the storm clouds that rolled through town yesterday? Then your vision is unsound. Oh, it may seem sound to you as long as you entertain those dark thoughts, but remember, to Ptolemy, this earth certainly seemed like the center of the universe. He even proved it with math. You know, the problem was, he was wrong. He was wrong. Can it be that simple? All we have to do is figuratively look on the bright side of things. On the relative scale of things, lean toward the positive rather than the negative, toward optimism rather than pessimism, toward love rather than hate. Maybe it is. Perhaps that really is all that's to it. Isn't that what Paul said in Philippians when he wrote, whatsoever is good, whatsoever is virtuous, whatsoever is kind, whatsoever is gracious, these positive things are the things we need to fix our minds on. Do I need to go in for my close-up or back off? The answer is simple. If you're looking at the light, zoom in. If what you see is darkness, zoom out. Only then will your vision be sound and will you be of sound mind. Let's pray about this. And to center ourselves for our experience of God in prayer, let's know that God is real. God is here, and that God is the one true power at work in our lives. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in our lives, God the good omnipotent. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God the good, omnipotent, and so it is.